Okay, good morning, Shalom Aleichem, everybody. Welcome back. We have a tremendous opportunity to learn today Parshas Vayigash, which is really the reunification of the brothers coming together after 24 years. And you really can feel it. You feel when you begin the Parsha and you could sense the deep emotion, the drama unfolding, the intensity of Yehuda's plea to Yosef. And when you learn the words of Rashi, you could like see how every single word that Yehuda, shared with Yosef was so calculated and was said so carefully. I saw last week that Rabbi Zev Leff from Moshav Matisyahu makes a very like sharp point, maybe say like a ha'ara on the story, is that very rarely throughout the Torah do we have a parsha that just, has a cliffhanger. Twice, I think, we have cliffhangers in the Torah. Generally, our parshios end, and like it's a closing of a story. Maybe there's a chapter two or chapter three that comes afterwards, like Shmos Ve'era Bo B'Shalach Yisro Mishpatim are very similar to that, and a lot of Bereishis is like that too. Miketz to Vayigash is a cliffhanger, right? Binyamin is taken. We don't know what to do. Abba Yaakov is gonna. Is not going to be able to live with himself now that Binyamin is gone and Yehuda steps up and we don't know what's going to be. So why would it be that here we have that unfolding? We have a stop in play. We have a cliffhanger here. And Rabbi Leff argues that the story of Yosef and the drama, the unfolding of the whole story represents Jewish history in a microcosm. Really, and while we may have, certain achievements, Yosef himself is doing really well in Mitzrayim. There might be certain accomplishments that the Jewish people achieve. It's not yet done, right? There's always more to get done. And ultimately, what it really represents is that the only time that we are going to fully achieve full Geula is when all of the brothers come back together. When there is a certain unification of the brothers, it doesn't mean that everyone needs to be uniform. Uniformity is not unity. Unity, right, is the main thing. Respect of people's differences. And he says that is the cliffhanger, not just of Miketz to Vayigash, rather the cliffhanger of all of Jewish history. The word Vayigash itself is fascinating. One of my Rebbeim, Rabbi David Miller, made a point that the word or the Shoresh, Vayigash, appears in the beginning of the Parsha and the end of the Parsha. Where does it come up at the end of the Parsha? Where does the word Gimel Shin, that Shoresh, come up at the end of the Parsha? Goshen. Vayigash and Goshen. And he says what Vayigash means he approached. Goshen is the place in which the Jewish people lived for the entirety of their stay in Egypt. That was like their Airbnb of Egypt. What does that Shoresh means? He argued that, I think he quoted his Rebbe, Remeir Shapiro, Rav Moshe Shapiro, who said that Gimel Shin puts together two things that don't belong together. So Yehuda approached Yosef, Vayigash Elav Yehuda. Yehuda and Yosef represented two different types of models of leadership. They had two different ways of running the world. Mashiach ben Yosef and Mashiach ben David. Two models of leadership for the brothers. And they needed the word Vayigash represents two people, two things coming together that don't necessarily belong together. That's why the Jewish people lived in a city called Goshen in Mitzrayim. The Jewish people don't belong in Mitzrayim. That's not appropriate or proper for where the Jewish people, should be. Rather, why are they there? Why is that the place that Hashem chose? Because that's what represents putting two things that don't belong together. They can't be in a Mitzrayim proper, but the Jewish people could be in that bridge location, and that is in Mitzrayim. That is in Goshen. Sorry. We see this with one other word, right? What do we do when we have two places that can't connect together just in the world today? and we want to connect them together. What do we use to put them together?
All right.
What? David, I can't hear you. Is that David? We use a bridge, right? New York and New Jersey, in the northern part of New Jersey, don't connect together. So how do we connect together? We connect them together with something called a bridge. What is a bridge in Hebrew? A gesher, right? Gesher tzar me'ot. A gesher, gimel shin, puts two things together that don't necessarily belong together. The Jewish people don't naturally belong in Egypt. Jules, refuah shlema. Hope everything is okay. They don't belong together in Egypt. And Yehuda and Yosef are like fire and water in terms of their approach to leadership. In fact, when the brothers finally come down to Egypt, who is sent down first? Right? Who is sent down first to establish? No, Yehuda. Mm-hmm. Is sent down first. Rashi writes, is sent to Shalach Lefanav, Mahoros Lefanav. Rashi writes, who was set up a yeshiva. That was Yehuda. The Chizkuni writes that he wasn't for yeshiva, but rather Yehuda couldn't, you know, what did he need to do? He was the one that could travel through Egypt to figure out the place in which, where Goshen was, and make like a map for the Jewish people to go to get to Goshen without traveling through any of the dangerous, spiritually dangerous areas in Mitzrayim. So he gave them, right, different than Rashi, not to establish yeshiva, but to help the Jewish people get to Goshen without traversing through any of the spiritually dangerous areas in Egypt. Okay, so Miketz Vayigash is one of two cliffhangers in the Torah. I'll leave that to you to tell me what the other cliffhanger in the Torah is. And secondly, Vayigash, where does that shoresh come from? Gimel Shin, what does it mean to put two things together that don't belong together? And that is a gesher. So Yosef is extremely emotional. And what's amazing is here is that Yehuda like asks for the room and almost like asks for like the aides to leave. And he speaks directly to Yosef. And for all he knows is that Yosef really doesn't understand him, because the part of this ruse was established because Yosef had one of his kids or his aides interpreting everything the brother said. So they would speak in Hebrew. Yosef would, you know, they would, this interpreter would say it in Egyptian, go back and forth. It would be like a, you know, a very complicated conversation. Yehuda here says, Daber na ba'ozne Adoni, I want to speak directly to you. I know you're not going to understand the word that I'm saying, really he did, but I want to speak directly to you because I want you to understand the emotion. When there's a translation in the middle of it, it's very hard to chap the emotions here and to understand the weight, the gravity of the conversation. That's why language is so significant. Sometimes when you are speaking to somebody in which English is not their natural language and they're trying to express a point to you, it's hard to really understand them and why this is important to them, why this matters to them, when they are speaking in a, you know, a language that is not doesn't come naturally to them. So Yosef reveals himself to the brothers. Ani Yosef ha'od avichai, so powerful, and so on so many levels. Right after Yosef says those powerful words, he says the following. Not right after, but a few psukim later, he says, "V'chilkalti oscha sham, don't worry, I'm going to take care of you in Mitzrayim. There are 5 years left to the famine. I'm going to take care of you. This is mem he yud aleph yud beis." Come down here because I know the famine is going to last longer. You should see, and my brother Binyamin should see for himself. Because I am the one that is speaking to you. Vigadati lavi as kol kvodim Mitzrayim and tell my father all of the things, all the kavod and all the positions that I have in Mitzrayim, how they treat me here. Veskol asher isa mihartem, hurry up and go down to your father. I want to focus on these words. Kifi hamedaber aleichem. What is Yosef telling the brothers? You should know that I am the one speaking to you. Yeah, hello, you just said you're Yosef. So what do you mean, I am the one speaking to you? What does that mean? So I think the most literal interpretation of this is the Ramban. The Ramban writes, Ki ani achichem u'metzava lahorid avi elai l'chalkol. You should know that I'm speaking to you, meaning I, Yosef, not only in my position as your brother, but I'm your brother, and I can really do everything I just said. I said I'm going to take care of you. I said I will provide food for you. I said there's going to be a famine for longer, and don't worry about it. You guys are all covered. How do you know you can trust me? Because I am talking to you. I am Yosef, your brother. I am speaking to you, and I can take care of all of you guys, right? You hit the lotto. I'm your brother. Love you. I'm taking care of you. Kifi hamedaber aleichem. Trust me. I'm your brother. That is the understanding of the Ramban. Rashi here says something different. Rashi here says that the brothers still were not yet convinced that this was Yosef, or Yosef sensed that they needed some further identification, further proof that this was Yosef. Again, they couldn't do a fingerprint ID. Yosef didn't have any identification papers from his, from the Altarheim. So how is he going to prove this? So he says to them, "No, I'm Yosef, kifi hamedaber aleichem, because I'm speaking to you b'lashon hakodesh. I'm speaking to you in Hebrew. And what if I was the minister of all of Egypt, second in command, you think I would need to bother myself with learning Hebrew? It must be, right? This is another further proof that I am your brother, Kipi Hamadaber Aleichem." The Meshech Chachma says something very, very powerful. Sorry, before I get to the Meshech Chachma, there's a third interpretation here, and that is the interpretation of Rav Zalman Sarutzkin. Rav Sarutzkin says, it doesn't mean he's speaking Hebrew. It doesn't mean he's saying, trust me, because I'm your brother, I'm going to take care of you. Rather, Kipi Hamadaber Aleichem, you know the proof that I'm your brother? You know how I'm going to prove that? Think about how I've been speaking to you. Do I ever use any curse words? Do I ever yell at you? Speak to the other people around here and ask them how I speak and the way I behave. And you'll see that I don't behave like the other Egyptians, especially the ones in power, ones that are power. It's not the way I carry myself as a Jew, as a B'nai Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov. You can ask around. You can sort yourself. Maybe I spoke firmly to you. Maybe I was part of the ruse. But I'm very careful with what comes out of my mouth. You could tell I'm a Jew just by the way that I speak and the manner that I use my koach hadibur. That's a very powerful Sarutzkin. But I want to go back to Rashi for a minute. The Lashon HaKodesh. The Meshech Chachma writes something very, very powerful later on in the Torah. Parshas Va'era, where the Jewish people are given the Da'al Lashonos Ge'ula, the four expressions, right, of Ge'ula, Yotzeiti, Vitzalti, V'ga'alti, V'lakachti, and we know there's a fifth one, V'hevesi. There, on that Pasuk, the Meshech Chachma writes that the Jewish people, one of the reasons why the Jewish people were able to survive Egypt, the Medrash writes, is because Shaloshinu Es Lashona. They never changed their language. And this is why in the early 20th century, late 19th century, when the Jewish people had the Zionist movement, one of the things they brought back into the world was Hebrew, because they viewed that as a stepping stone to, bring back the land of Israel. That it's not only about the land itself, it is about speaking the language. And he says here that how do the Jewish people know that this was something, not changing their language and keeping the identity of Hebrew intact, that this would be something that would help them achieve Geula one day? Again, you're talking 210 years later, maybe even more years. Right? They did this because they believed one day that Hebrew would be important again. They believed one day that they would need to speak the language of the Torah again. The Lamdu Zami Yosef says the Master Chachma, they learned this from Yosef. Shim Godol Hashivuso b'Mitzrayim, even though he was so amazing and so powerful in Mitzrayim, you could say right away, I don't speak Hebrew, it doesn't matter anymore. I'll have one of my servants learn Hebrew and he'll speak for me. No. What do you see? Yosef knew. Kifi hamedaber aleichem, she mekavet lahasid, omer pakod yivkod eschem. Right, you see from here that Yosef kept Hebrew because he always believed he would be reunited with his brothers. He would need the language again, that he'd be reunited. So they learned from Yosef that the power of keeping the language was so, so significant, because that was part of keeping the hope that one day we would need it again, he with his brothers, they in the land of Israel. Just now,
Rabbi,
Lucas. Yes.
How did he keep the language? Who did he converse with?
I don't know. Maybe his kids. Well, clearly Menashe understood Hebrew.
Menashe, okay, that's it.
So it seems like when he learned with his kids, he learned Hebrew. Why is Hebrew called Lashon HaKodesh? Right? Why is it called Lashon HaKodesh? Why is it called the holy language, the holy tongue? This is a machlokas, Ramban and Rambam. The Rambam writes in Mor Nevuchim, Gimel Ches, that the reason why it's called Lashon HaKodesh is because there's no bad words. There's no in the entire language, no curse words in the language itself. Even the words that we have for body parts, which are generally spoken in a more modest way, aren't said explicitly. Therefore, he says it's called Lashon HaKodesh because it's Lashon Nikiyah. It's a clean language. That is the approach of the Rambam in Mor Nevuchim. The Ramban, I'll give you the Maror Malkum, Shmos Lamed Yud Gimel, writes that it's called Lashon HaKodesh because that is the way that Hashem spoke and to the Nevi'im. When anybody got prophecy, it was spoken in Lashon HaKodesh. Ibnesha Divrei HaTorah, the Torah is written in Hebrew. V'hanevuos, v'chol Divrei Kedusha, kulan b'lashon ahu namru. It's all written in Hebrew. It's all written in Lashon HaKodesh. Therefore, it's called Kodesh. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wrote the Torah in Hebrew, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu converses with his people in the language of Hebrew, it must be Kodesh. Okay, to do different approaches to, is it Lashon Kodesh or Mitzvah to learn Hebrew? That's Rambam on Perish Mishnayos, who writes a Mitzvah Kala. You should be Zahir, but Mitzvah Kala Kibachamura. The Mitzvah Kala he writes is Lashon Kodesh. Okay, it's very, very important to, you know, new generation. We should be careful that our kids are learning Hebrew. But Yosef used this as a sign of hope that he never gave up on the Smesha Chachma, never gave up on Hebrew because he believed he would need it one day again, as Rashi. Next pasuk, Vayipol, Yosef then, right? I'm Yosef Onavichai. And then who comes towards him? Brother Binyamin. Vayipol al tzavarei Binyamin achiv, Vayivk. He falls on the necks of Binyamin, his brother. Ubinyamin bacha al tzavarav. And Binyamin cries on his necks. Says Rashi, right? What's with the neck, right? They cried on each other's necks. What's going on here? It happens to be that this comes up a lot. We also see that Yaakov and Yosef, they embrace the word Savar is used there as well. Rashi here writes, Ashtei Mikdashos. First, Yosef falls on Binyamin's neck. Why? And what this is a reference to, two necks. What next? What are we talking about? Chasidin Lios Bechelko. First, the Tubati Mikdash that were partially in the territory of Binyamin. And two of them are going to be destroyed. And he's crying already about that in the future. And Binyamin's crying on the Tzavarei Yosef, Tzavarav Shal Yosef, that he's crying about the Mishkan Shiloh. For those in the Navi Shir, on Monday, we just learned about the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh and a reference to it in Shmuel Perek Vav, just 2 days ago. Mishkan Shiloh she'asid lios b'chalko she'yosef v'sof alichav. So Binyamin is crying over the Mishkan Shiloh that was going to be destroyed in the territory of Yosef. And Yosef's crying over the two Bati Mikdash that are going to be destroyed in the territory of Binyamin. Now, very simply put, like, what does this mean? Like, these brothers can't just cry over, like, not seeing each other for so long, and that within itself is so significant. What? Rashi needs to dig deep into the Midrashim and explain something, you know, which is so far off, so many, you know, years into the future. They're crying because, you know, they're crying because they haven't seen each other in 22 years. And Binyamin thought that his older brother Yosef was dead, period. So what does this mean? So I want to share with you an idea from Rav Chaim Druckmann Zatzal. Rav Druckmann was one of the leaders in the Dati Lumi community in Eretz Yisrael, one of the Gedolei Ador in Eretz Yisrael, passed away this past week. He writes in his Sefer that really, what's the message here? Is it's Hainuhach, it's the same thing. Because the reason why Yosef was separated for 22 years was because of the fighting of the brothers. The destruction of these two Batei Mikdash was because Jewish people couldn't get along. So it's Hainuhach, right? It's the continued story. So they're crying, not just right now that this had to happen, that they couldn't see each other for 22 years. They're also crying because the Jewish people are not going to learn their lesson, not now, and not in the near future. In the near future, we mean the next 1,000 years. And that within itself is very, very sad. That is the approach of Rav Druckmann Zatzal on this pasuk. Rav Zaks, the Menachem Tzion, writes the following. He says something very, very beautiful. If you think about it, right, when what gave the path for the two Batei Mikdash to be destroyed, to be built, it only happened because Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed. And then eventually the Jewish people, you know, a few decades later, built the Beis HaMikdash. So you could argue that Binyamin is sort of happy with the destruction of Mishkan Shiloh because it brings the ability for the Jewish people to build the Beis HaMikdash. And you could argue that Yosef's like, ha, we couldn't figure it out in Shiloh, and you guys couldn't figure it out in the Beis HaMikdash. See, we all can't figure it out. I'm happy because you're unhappy. And generally, that is the typical way that people approach life. Very naturally, very human. If I can't do it, then you can't do it. And that's, you know, if I can't get the simcha and you can't get the simcha, then I'm happy. But if I want the, you know, if, and so the, because really, we are so competitive in everything that we do in the community, between communities, we're so competitive. And we only want to see the loss of Klal Yisrael. So really here, what you see is two brothers that only want to see what, you know, each other be successful. So they're crying over the losses that each other, you know, have, even though very naturally each other's loss is a win for the other one, but they don't see it. That's not the way they see it in their perspective. Okay. So we saw it so far this morning. We began with why does Mikates end in a cliffhanger? To Vayigash, we saw the Shoresh, Goshen, Vayigash, Gesher. What does that mean? The power of Hebrew and what that means in the story, the narrative of Yosef. Kifi, Hamidaber, Lechem, the Meshech Chachma. Then we move to Vayipolat Savarei Binyamin Achiv Vayifk, Ubinin Bachal Savarav. What does that mean? Why are they crying on each other's shoulders? It should be something that they're crying over 22 years. Or if Druckmann says, it was a loss of unity, which is really the shoresh of all losses of the Jewish people. What really shows that they really wanted to encourage each other to grow, and they weren't competitive. Echad l'asheni. That is, those are four ideas. Last idea for this morning, I'm going to go towards the end of the parasha. Not so much the end. So much to talk about over here. So, says the Torah, Vayomer. So Hashem, Yaakov goes out to Mitzrayim, and he knows this is what needs to get done. And where does he go into Mitzrayim? He goes to Mitzrayim, he goes into Be'er Sheva. About 6 years ago, I spent 4 days in Israel with the JNF, the Jewish National Fund, and it was an amazing trip. They brought up about 5-6 rabbis from North Jersey to Israel to show us around. And we spent some time in Be'er Sheva. And we were in a makeshift hospital, which wasn't yet a hospital, wasn't yet functioning at all. It was empty. And they said this in the future is going to be a hospital for the inhabitants of Be'er Sheva. And it was on the border. And I said, like, what is that down there? Like miles down, but you could see something. They said, oh, that's Egypt. That's right there. That's like, you could see it. It was at a time where the Iron Dome needed to be situated in the middle of the two fields. And you can appreciate these psukim because the last city that Yaakov went down to in order to get to Mitzrayim was Be'er Sheva. It is a border town. And it wasn't only because of that. You can say very practically, this is where he needs to go. The Midrashim paint a picture as that Yaakov needed to go down to Be'er Sheva specifically. This was a place where Avraham lived and Yitzchak lived for a large part of their life. And Yaakov needed that chizuk when he went down to Mitzrayim. Some say that he even took the trees that Avraham planted, the Eshel tree. I think it literally that it really was a tree. And he planted those trees into Mitzrayim. And those trees eventually became the wood that they used for the Mishkan. So he needs to give him chizuk. So he comes down to he goes down to Be'er Sheva. Bisa Yisrael v'chol asher lo ve'evo Be'er Sheva v'yizbach zvachim l'lohei aviv Yitzchak. He brings korbanos. V'evo v'yimer Elokim v'Yisrael barmos alayla. Hashem comes to him at night. V'yomer Yaakov v'yomer hineni. This is one of very, very few times in the entire Torah that we see that what time of day Hashem is coming to one of the Nevi'im, to Yaakov in this case. But Maharas HaLaila, the Meshachma writes, because Mitzrayim is going to be a very dark time. And Hashem is showing him, even though it's going to be very dark, I am coming to you in this darkness. So too, the Jewish people can experience me in the Choshech. And he says, Vayomar Anochi Akela Elokei Avicha Al Tira Neder Mitzrayim. Don't be afraid of going down to Mitzrayim. Ki L'goy Gadol Asim Chasham. This is part of the plan. I'm going to make you into a great nation in Egypt. Anochi Ered Imcha Mitzrayim. I'm going to go down to Mitzrayim. Manochi Alcha Gam Alo. And I will come out with you. Hashem says, I'm going to be with you in Egypt, right? When someone's going through pain and someone's afraid, right? Follow the words of God. You tell them. You have to mean it. I'm going to be with you every step of the way, right? And this gives tremendous strength to Yaakov's mission now going down to Egypt. Hashem says, I will be holding your hand and holding you up as you go down into Egypt. The Yosef Yashis Yado al Einech. Now, what do these words mean? And Yosef's hand shall close your eyes. No. Yosef's hand will close your eyes. Now, what does this mean? So says the Chizkuni. Says the Chizkuni. Yossi's hand is going to close your eyes. Says the Chizkuni. Min haghu shehachayim osim imamisim shesogrim es enehem samach achar hapatira. There's a minhag that the people that are living, after somebody passes away, what do? Eventually, they close the eyes of the mace. Not right away. The Gemara says if you do it right away, that may make the person, cause the person to die quicker, but eventually close the eyes. Vayhamavticho she Yosef yebitirasa. Hashem is saying to Yaakov that Yosef is going to be on your bedside when you die. V'yazer lo lahutzio mimitzrayim lo licha lamara. And he's going to ensure that you will be buried in Maras HaMachpelah. Yaakov was nervous here on two levels. He loved Eretz Yisrael. You don't want to leave. Maybe his children were going to be, you know, leave him. They're going to be acculturated and forget about him. Hashem was promising him here, not only will I go down to Egypt with you, but your children will be around your bed. And you will be able to reconnect with Yosef. Yosef's going to be there with you at the end of your days. That, right, is very, very powerful for a parent to hear, especially in this situation. It was excusable, right, for Yosef to forget about his father purposefully. I'll take care of you. You know, we'll make some public appearances together, but come on, Dad. You let me go for 22 years. Oh, the brother is a, come on, it happened to you. Hashem is promising him that there's going to be a reunification. You and Yosef are going to reconnect. The two of you are going to be close in Mitzrayim. And that's really all that a parent wants. That after all is said and done, that who is going to be there for you? Achas Moso, it's going to be your children, right? And then he was nervous that who was going to bury me in Eretz Yisrael? How is that going to be? Because that's where he wanted to be buried. Yosef's going to take care of it all, right? When all is said and done, we could be famous and popular and well-known throughout the entire world. When all is said and done, who do we want there to take care of us after 120? It's our children. As great as Yaakov was, this is all he wanted. Right after this pasuk, Vayakom Yaakov mi Be'er Sheva. Yaakov gets up and he goes down to Mitzrayim. He hears this. This calms him down. This helps him go into Mitzrayim with his head held up high, knowing ultimately that his kids will be by his side.
Rabbi.
Yes.
So from this point on, I think Yaakov his whole life was looking for some peace and quiet, which he never really achieved. So from this point on, did he achieve that? I know you're saying the
question. He spent 17 years in Egypt, right? The gematria of Tov, of good, is 17.
So he finally achieved his peace and quiet.
Again, spending it with his, with the Ein HaKlach. Right,
and the other thing is the other place, the Era and Bo, with the cliffhanger, with the three Makos going into Pasha's Bo.
That's not what I was thinking about. I think that's like, there are chapters there. The seven in, the seven are a unit itself. There's, you can argue that way. The other, it's Pinchas, it's Balak and Pinchas, with the, we don't know, Zimri and Cosby were murdered. We don't know who was murdered. Pinchas got up. He doesn't tell us who they are until beginning of Pinchas. Okay, wish everybody a wonderful, wonderful, and warm Shabbos.